And good morning, everyone, and welcome to the September 2022 HITAC meeting. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. As a reminder, your feedback is always welcomed, which could be typed in the chat feature throughout the meeting, or could be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled at about 11:50 Eastern Time this morning. So let's get started with our meeting. First, I'd like to welcome ONC's executive leadership team to the meeting. And with us today is Elise Sweeney Anthony, the Executive Director of the Office of Policy, and Avinash Shambag, the Executive Director of the Office of Technology. I'll now begin roll call of our HITAC members, along with our federal agency representatives of the HITAC. So when I call your name, please indicate that you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Aaron Meary.
Good morning.
Denise Webb.
Good morning.
Madel Briggs-Melanson.
Good morning.
Hans Gutendijk.
Good morning.
Thomas Cantalina. Stephen Eichner. Cynthia Fisher. Lisa Fry.
Good morning.
Raj Goodparchi. Valerie Gray. Adigun Lapali.
Good morning.
Stephen Hester.
Good morning.
Rom Iyer. Jim Durgis. Meredith Joseph. Don Kansky.
Good morning.
Ken Kamoto.
Morning.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Leslie Leonard. Hung Wu.
Good morning.
Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Glenn McDonald. Jonathan Nebaker. Aaron Nyenstein.
Good morning.
Elio Oliveira.
Good morning.
Brett Oliver.
Good morning.
James Pantelis. Raj Watwani. Alexandra Muggy.
Good morning.
Abby Sears. Alexis Snyder.
Good morning.
Phil Sutherland.
Good morning.
Ram Sharam. And Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much. And now I would like to introduce Dr. Stephen Lane, who has a brief announcement. Stephen?
Thank you, Mike. I hope you can hear me well. I am announcing a change in my representation, which will become effective next month. In addition to my clinical practice at Sutter Health, which is contracting into a smaller program of telemedicine, I'm going to be taking on next month the role of Chief Medical Officer for Health Gorilla, which is a health data company, which is applying to be one of the first QHINs under the new TEFCA, so clearly a different role in relationship to ONC, and I wanted to announce that to everyone here before that change happens next month.
Great. Thank you, Stephen. And now please join me in welcoming Elise Sweeney Anthony for her opening remarks. Elise?
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much, Mike. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining today's HITAC. Thank you to the members and everyone who has joined to listen in as well. I wanted to give a couple of updates on behalf of Mickey Tripathi, who's speaking at a conference this morning. He will plan to join the meeting later today, but wanted to make sure we shared some of the exciting things that ONC is engaged in. So first, I wanted to know the ONC Tech Forum. So hopefully you joined last week for the kickoff. It was an amazing, amazing afternoon. And the focus of last week was health IT standards, driving modernization in healthcare and public health. And we had an excellent lineup of speakers and great participation from our stakeholders. And we're looking forward to the next two meetings as well. So September is going to be a busy month for the tech team. So next Friday, the theme is going to be guiding innovation through data standards and real world implications. And then the third and final meeting will be on the 23rd. And the theme is how health IT certification is modernizing healthcare and public health. So you're welcome to participate in any of these scheduled sessions. And that's for anyone on the line. You can register online. If you'd like to review the agenda as well, you can do that at, as online as well at healthit.gov and just search Tech Forum and it'll come up. There's also the tech showcase, which is really cool as well. And it's a tab on the website that has videos and demos from health IT innovators, highlighting some new and exciting work being done to advance digital health and improve care. So I encourage folks to check that out. The next announcement I wanted to make is to announce that the Sequoia Project, which many on this call are familiar with as the recognized coordinating entity for ONC in regards to supporting the implementation of the Trusted Change Framework and Common Agreement, or TEFCA. They recently announced new standard operating procedures and the QHIN application. So all of that's available on their website. And they expect to open the application portal to prospective QHINs on Monday, October 3rd. The RCE has held multiple feedback sessions and modified and updated the SOPs and application based on the tremendous input from stakeholders, which has been invaluable. And as you all know, throughout this process, we have engaged with the public, we've engaged with you as a HITACH to share your thoughts and feedback regarding the different stages as we move towards implementation of TEFCA. So really excited for this next stage and all the work that the RCE has been doing. The release of these documents is a major milestone and moves the RCE further in the operational phase of TEFCA, which is exciting in and of itself. The RCE has been invited to present to the HITACH at the October 13th meeting. So stay tuned for that as well. We're looking forward to that presentation. And if you have any questions regarding where the RCE is in their implementation or some of the materials that I mentioned today, check out rce.sequoiaproject.org. And of course, my dog is going to bark right when I'm presenting. So it wouldn't be a presentation without it. So I apologize. I also wanted to give an update on ONC's Notice of Proposed Rulemaking. And we discussed this at the January HITACH meeting. It's entitled, and it's a long title, ONC Health IT Certification Program Updates, Health Information Network Attestation Process for the Trust Exchange Framework and Common Agreement, and Enhancements to Support Information Sharing Rule. And it's listed in the Unified Agenda. So I wanted to note that the NPRM was accepted by OMB for review, and it was accepted on September 1st. Once it is released to the public, we will ask the HITACH to convene a task force to review the NPRM and provide recommendations during the public comment period. So stay tuned for that. The Unified Agenda has the release date anticipated for October 22, 2022. However, note that the date may change. It's subject to change. ONC will also be hosting two events that I want to highlight. So as you know, in the past, we've done information sharing webinars and presentations. We've done a series with providers as well, and we've done office hours, and we want to continue doing those office hours as well. So the next series of office hours, the information sharing virtual office hours, will be available, are on our website, and it's going to be focused on questions around the information blocking regulations, any question you may have. The sessions are going to be held on September 22nd, October 6th, and October 27th. So I wanted to highlight those. We encourage folks to just call in. The platform is really easy to use and gives you a chance to ask the regulatory team any question that may be on your mind regarding the information blocking regulations. And my team does a phenomenal job. Absolutely phenomenal job setting those up. And as many of you who have joined the calls know, we definitely try to listen and understand what you're seeing on the ground and to provide answers or direct you to the rule where we are able to do so. So please do check those out again, September 22nd, October 6th, and October 27th. The second thing I wanted to note is something that's happening today and tomorrow. So the security risk assessment tool, ONC and OCR are hosting two webinars today and tomorrow for you to receive a basic overview of the tool and to hear highlights of the enhancements made in version 3.3. There will also be an opportunity for participants to ask questions and give feedback during the session. You can still register for the information sharing office hours and the security risk assessment webinars on the events tab at healthit.gov. I also wanted to note as a reminder that ONC recently opened the submission period for the new data classes and elements for USCDI version 4. And we're really interested in receiving your comments on existing data elements as well. So if you search, again, healthit.gov, if you search USCDI, on healthit.gov, then you will find information will come up regarding the submission process. Do note that submission period period ends on September 30th, 2022. So hard to believe we're already in September talking about fall, but the submission period will end on September 30th, 2022. There's also an annual comment period for the Interoperability Standards Advisory, or the ISA, and that opened on July 28th. The comments and comment suggestions or proposed additions also have to be in by September 30th, 2022. So really important date. So please do take a look at that. You can also find it on our website, and we really encourage feedback. You know, you always hear me say the importance of hearing what implementation looks like, what is important to you, what is important to anybody in the world of healthcare regarding health IT. And that includes as it relates to standards, as it relates to what would be in the US CDI, and really all of our work at ONC. So these opportunities to provide comment, as folks know, we read every single comment, we review every single comment. So it's really helpful to get your feedback, whether it's short or long, two sentences or two pages, whatever is helpful for you to share. We really encourage you to let us know what you're thinking. So with that, I want to thank all of the members of the HITECH for all the work that they've been doing. And I also want to thank the Adoptive Standards Task Force for their efforts to develop recommendations that the HITECH is going to discuss and vote on today. So I know it's been a lot of work and we really do appreciate it. And special thanks to Hans and to Steve for serving as co-chairs on this committee, on this task force. It's been really helpful and looking forward to hearing the discussion later today. And with that and all of those updates, I want to turn it over to Aaron and Denise.
Awesome. Thank you, Elise. And I do want to echo what you said. Your team is awesome at those updates. So please reach out to the ONC. We've said it every year, but Elise, your team rocks. Thank you for all the work you're doing. It is not easy explaining to hundreds and thousands and millions of people what's going on, but thank you for that work. It's very, very well appreciated. So with that, welcome to this month's HITECH, everybody. I'm joined obviously by my illustrious co-chair, Denise. So we're going to walk you through today a number of items that are a very packed agenda. Before we get started, though, before I turn it over to Denise, I do want to say congratulations, Dr. Lane. We're proud of you. You're going to rock it in your new role and continue to serve the HITECH well. So congrats, sir. Appreciate you staying on and being part of our family still. All right, Denise, over to you.
All right. Congratulations, Stephen. So I have a bad cold, so I'm going to limp through this meeting. So I'm going to keep my remarks short, but Elise, thank you for the great update. Wow, there's a lot going on, and we're all going to be really busy this fall with all of these activities and events. So we have a great meeting ahead of us, not too long, a couple hours, and welcome everyone, and hopefully we'll get a lot of good input today and have our recommendations from the Adopted Standards Task Force fly through with no issues, hopefully. So I'm going to turn it over to Aaron and let him review the agenda with you and approve the call for approval of the minutes.
Absolutely. Thank you, Denise, and I hope you feel better. All right, so today's agenda, obviously we have our opening remarks right now. Next will be the Adopted Standards Task Force, some great work that Steve and Hans have been leading there. Very technical, and couldn't think of two more qualified, wonderful individuals to lead that effort and explain to us in plain English what all this means. So congrats to them. We'll do the HITECH Annual Report Work Group. That's near and dear to my heart. And then we'll go to the Public Health Data Systems Task Force update, public comment around 11:50, and then adjourn right about lunchtime Eastern Standard Time. So with that, hopefully you all got the prior meeting minutes from last month's meeting. It was a robust discussion. So I'd like to call for a motion to approve, please.
So moved.
All right, may I have a second?
Second, Holmes.
All right, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, please say nay. And any abstentions? All righty, I think the meeting minutes are approved from last month. So with that, I'm going to transition now over to Stephen and Hans.
All right, good morning, everybody. And I think that Steve is going to kick us off. Is Steve on?
He is on. He may be on mute. I just saw him.
If not, I can.
I'm unmuted. Listen.
Let's go to the next slide, please. We had a great task force, did work over about 16 or so weeks to look at all of the standards that ONC is responsible for administering through federal regulations. Under the 21st Century Cures Act, there's a requirement for ONC to review all the standards in regulation and determine whether they should be maintained or retired. And the task force was charged with making recommendations in that space. We had a great membership. We're going to then go through the approach we used. We broke down the standard into different groups for discussion, and then we've got a set of recommendations to make. So let's go to the next slide, please. As I mentioned, there's a review of adopted standards required 5 years after the passage of the 21st Century Cures Act, and every 3 years after the first one, looking at determining whether the standards should be maintained or should it be phased out. And again, it comes out of the 21st Century Cures Act. Let's go to the next slide, please. So the charge of the task force was to review these standards. The standards are maintained on the ONC Standards Hub, which is a semi-permanent URL. The charge did not include making recommendations about new standards or implementation specifications for ONC to adopt. In other words, not looking at an expansion of the regulatory role. Next slide, please. We had a very diverse task force with healthcare providers, vendors, and public health, and other communities all interested, all involved, and all making valuable contributions to the task force's work. Next slide. We also had a variety of subject matter experts, not on the task force, but providing their insights. So we went through 55 standards for review. We developed in several different standards blocks to facilitate that review. We developed a grid and collected input from task force members to identify where we needed to get additional information and do more in-depth research. Through a series of task force meetings, we included community-based experts to expand our knowledge and develop recommendations, and then drafted discussions and rationales for each standard, and have drafted a report for submission to the HITECH for HITECH approval. Next slide, please. This is the list of presenters. As you can see, we had a wide range of experts from organizations like the CDC, the Association of Public Health Labs, ONC, Public Health Department, and standards development organizations. Next slide. For each standard, we develop a disposition framework. Yes, sir. Looking at either recommending that the standard be maintained, looking at maintained or phased out with replacement. And by replacement, we were looking at a version change of the standard. For example, currently in regulation, there might be a reference to a 2015 standard. While there might be a new standard currently available or an updated version of that standard available. So the task force may have made a recommendation for a standard to be replaced. Again, looking at a phase out with replacement, similar in nature, or the option of phasing out entirely. I don't believe we got any standards that we recommended to be phased out entirely. Next slide. As I mentioned earlier, we broke out the standards into a number of different logical groups to facilitate the review, including data scope and vocabulary standard, general data access standard, care coordination standard, public health exchange standard, Center for Quality Measurement standard, privacy and security standard, accessibility standard, but we're seeing things like 33 and accessibility of resources for individuals with disabilities, and standards about the certification process. Go to the next slide, please. As this slide presents summary information about the dispositions of each standard, as you can see, a majority of the standards of task force found that there might be a suitable replacement currently available, including an SBAP. And there were several that we suggest maintain with phasing out the replacement, and 14 standards that there is not currently a potential replacement standard. And again, as I mentioned earlier, there were no standards that we suggested that could be phased out. Next slide, please. This is a summary slide representing the disposition of each standard by group to give a sense of what changes might need to be made. Again, looking at the data scope and vocabulary standards, having a significant number of standards that might be phased out with replacement. And the standards here, just by number, we did not do a proportional graph or proportional graphic. Next slide, please. This is the first slide that represents a breakdown of the specific standards. So we'll turn the floor to him and let him walk us through the first standard, and then we'll alternate going through. Tom?
All right, thank you, Stephen. And now we're diving into a little bit more of the details. We are not planning to look specifically and address each individual standard with the specific recommendation, because there's a lot of similarity among them. So we are going to be highlighting some of the key areas where it is. And then in the next couple of slides within this section, we are going to look at the general disposition as well, but we're not going to review each and a specific recommendation at this point. However, if you have any questions, about the specific standards, then certainly put it in the chat, and then we can bring it up, or just at the end that we can go back to that. So in this group, we had a variety of standards that are around vocabulary. So the SNOMED, the LOINC, et cetera, type of code systems, as well as USCDI, which sets the scope for the data that is mostly being addressed in other standards. So that was the area. We had 21 standards in that. Most of it you will see that are on the maintain on the phase out with replacement. And the rationale behind that generally is that there are more current versions out there. And particularly with the vocabulary advancement generally is that even what's in regulations, there's already the opportunity to use a more current version in certification or otherwise. So from that perspective, that was an anticipated a large number there. A couple of things jumping out, UCDI, version one is in the regulation, but we already know that there is a version two in ASFAP. There's a version three out there that's being worked on further. We're starting to look at a version four. So that's clearly one that can be looked at and should be considered to in a next regulatory update to look at a more current version. And therefore it is a phase out with replace. Generally, the notion of phase out and replace, and that really bears repeating, is that it is not a phase out now. It is important to have that replacement so that it's an orderly transition from one to the next. There are some dependencies with USCDI that that one has to be very careful not to advance USCDI too far. If, for example, today, literally, USCDI version 3 were to be chosen, the underlying and supporting standards, FHIR US Core CCDA, are not ready yet to support that. So you have to be careful about the dependencies, but in general, it can be phased out version one and can be replaced by a more current version. The specific one outside of the scope of this task force to nail down exactly which one. SNOMED and LOINC, we had a number of different standards that are referencing SNOMED and LOINC, different versions. So here the theme that you see is that yes, clearly they can advance. There are more current versions. Going back to the statement that it's already permissible to use more current versions based on the guidance in the regulations. But also there are a couple of different versions specifically referenced among this the references. And therefore it should be looked at, can we reference just one, the most current one, and then apply that process accordingly. So there is an opportunity to consolidate both references to SNOMED and references to LOINC respectively into a fewer, if not one reference. Then there is one smaller one, but still notable. There was a reference to OMB race and ethnicity. And based on how the standard is actually referenced, the value set and the code system is being referenced, there is ambiguity as to exactly which revision is being considered. So that's something just to look at to make sure that that is clear to the reader and the implementer. Last statement, vocabulary advancement is very valuable. That opportunity to have and certify and use the most current version available in LOINC or XNOR, whichever one, is very valuable to ensure that we don't have to go through regulatory updates in order to use them. We don't even have to go through ASFAP to already use them. We can already take advantage of them as well. So it is effectively for most of these a matter of raising the lowest version at that point in time while we continue the progress. If you go to the next slide, I'm not going to go, and we're generally not going to go in detail, but here you'll have a quick look at which ones are specifically phased out with replacement. You go to the next slide that continues. All the links are here to go out. There is an interesting one on tags for identifying languages because it depends on what's available, whether it should be maintained or not. So you'll start to see that, but it's that's further in the details. And the last slide in this section is where you see the three that are being noted as maintained because we don't have awareness of a more current version that would be better suited potentially or as an alternative. So maintaining was the recommendation. So that's the first section. And then we're going to go to the next section. That's on slide 22. On this section, we are looking at general data access. We grouped in there a number of the Firebase standards, Fire standards that enable APIs, enable bulk data, relate to smart framework. So those are the ones that are in there. Generally, what we're seeing there is that we had phase out with replacement because there are for a number of those already new published versions out there and perhaps already in SFAP as well. So the combination of those two really led us to indicate that a phase out with replacement is appropriate. The one notable on maintain is related to the base Fire standard. There is actually a current version, a more current version out there that is Fire R4B. And there is a actually today opening of the ballot for Fire R5. We don't believe that at this point in time that it's appropriate to recommend to go to a new version. There is a substantial amount of effort that would be required, both on the adoption of the standard and all the implementation guides that are built on Fire R4. So, but we did note it to indicate a recommendation is maintain. However, it is appropriate to start to explore when is advancement appropriate? What are the criteria? What are the considerations to do that? Because this particular one would require a reasonably long runway to ensure that industry, everybody is lined up and ready to make that kind of a switch. So if today's, if you will, somebody were to say, okay, let's move to fire R4B, would be quite a challenge if we say that we are building towards a couple of years from now to start to consider that, then we can get everything lined up that needs to be ready to make that happen, given all the dependencies. So that's the main theme here. And if you look at the individual standards on the next page, you'll see that that's on the first one, but US Core, Fire US Core, there is more current one. They're already starting to be referenced in SVAP, so a progression makes a lot of sense. Bulk data access the same, and the smart launch framework as well. So that's in this space, but the key one being is that provide an appropriate runway, and in the absence of that, maintain is the appropriate recommendation for now. Then let's move on to the next one, and then we're going to do musical chairs again. Care coordination is where there are a number of standards that were specifically and have been specifically used in the coordination of care. Not that others could not be used, but it seemed like a reasonable way to group them and not have too large of a group. That's where CCDA standards and implementation guidance are listed. That's where a couple of other ones are as well. Here you see that maintaining as the primary CCDA, the main document version 2.1, is a maintain because that's what the guidance for CCDA is built on. And there is not a new one other than some erratas perhaps out there that we are aware of. All the work is being done for guidance in the companion guides and associated work. So those are the ones that would be appropriate to progress. And therefore there's already some references there, publications there, work in flight. So that's a reasonable one to indicate the companion guides phase out with replace, but the CCDA, unless something else comes out, but I'm not aware of, would be a maintain. There is another one that is being referenced here, CCDA IHE Health Story, that is providing guidance on the older versions of CCDA. And there is effectively two types of standards to be looked at. One is for what do we use to generate documents moving forward, and what do we need to support to always be able to view and as appropriate to incorporate data from earlier versions of CCDA. So here the statement is that around ensuring that that capability of viewing and being able to use an existing older CCDA needs to be preserved, hence the maintain in that space. But make it very clear that it is for viewing, reconciling, or incorporating purposes. It's not for generating. The idea would be, and as we have started to see, that the most current version is where we like to see generation occur, the other ones to be able to continue taking advantage of the content of that data. There are a couple of variations that could be used, and that would be up for discussion once that topic comes around in rulemaking. So those are the main things that jump out. If you go to the next slide and we look at the specific details, probably should have made a little bit more note of the on the prior slide of NCPDP as well. The number 32, there is a proposal out. We know that there is a more current version in play beyond 2017, and therefore it's marked as phase out with replacement. There is a conversation going on what's the right one. Is 2022-011? Is it 071? But it clearly is indicative of there is an appropriate and suitable replacement in play that also additionally has some capabilities that are of quite a bit of interest. So that's the picture that you see here with the recommendations that we're making. And with that, I'm going to switch it back to Steve.
Thank you. So we'll go to the next slide. So we're going to talk a little bit about public health exchange standards. And this was a collection of standards that support exchange of data between healthcare providers and public health. One of the things that's a little bit different about many of these exchange standards is that currently public health data systems are not certified, and most public health agencies are not using certified systems as EHRs to receive data from providers. So that's important as we're looking at considering standards modification or standards progression in this space, that there's active conversation between CDC, OMC, public health, and healthcare providers to ensure that there are appropriate resources to support any standard modifications or standard evolution, and that the data exchanged in those new standards or any change standard continues to meet or better meet public health's need for data. That being said, there is, sorry, let's go back for a second. Thank you. So looking at things like the immunization registry, cancer registry, and laboratory reporting, there are several specific opportunities when looking at laboratory reporting, one being looking at a newer version of ELR, electronic laboratory reporting, as well as potentially looking at the use of laboratory reporting interface, which incorporates ELR as one of its categories, so that there are some different paths that ONC can choose to pursue in looking at adopting a replacement standard. And again, there's a distribution between maintaining and looking at replacing, again, with nothing looking at being phased out entirely. So now let's go to the next slide, please. And like the other group, this provides a little more detail and the disposition recommendation for each slide. The full report does include not only the disposition recommendation, but the rationale that the task force developed to explain its recommendation, providing additional detail. Let's go to the next slide, please. So looking at clinical quality measure reporting standards, these standards are used to report information from healthcare providers to CMS for quality measures. And we noted that there's an updated QRDA standard to support any changes in CMS quality measure, quality implementation guide, so that there's a majority of the standards in this group will be looking at phasing out with replacement as CMS modifies its quality reporting standards. Next slide, please. And again, this is a list of the standards that were included in the group and their disposition recommendation. Next slide, please. Looking at privacy and security standards, these are standards that are used to define privacy and security requirements. They are well established and have been in place for a number of years. There is currently a public comment period looking at the Secure Hat standard as a catalog of standards. If the standard is maintained as is, there should be a notation in the standard that SAW 1 is disallowed. There were problems in using SAW 1 with the security risk, and it's not currently used in practice. It could actually probably be noted that it is not used or should not be used in future efforts. And again, most of these standards are looking at being maintained, with a couple looking at potentially being replaced as a new updated version becomes available. Next slide, please. And this is the detail for the privacy and security standard. But again, the task force grouped these for convenience of administration and review, but is not recommending that there be a reorganization of federal regulation in that space. This is just an administrative action just for convenience. Next slide, please. And finally, in my catalog, looking at accessibility standards, and these standards are technical standards relating to the access of information electronically. The task force consulted with the Office of Civil Rights at the Health and Human Services Department to identify if there were any changes that OCR expected going forward in accessibility, with the idea of if there were, looking at alignment of the standards for EHRs, aligning with any other work OCR is engaging in to create a more uniform perspective, not only within electronic health records, but across the domain of electronic access. And OCR was very helpful in providing guidance. They're not looking at any other changes. So again, looking at phasing out with replacement at such time as a replacement standard becomes available. Next slide, please. And again, there were only two standards in this catalog looking at web content accessibility. And let's go to the next slide, please. Hans, do you want to take this one?
Sure. So in this set, this is a fairly straightforward one. When you look at the group highlights, there are currently two standards in this space that focus on the process that certification agencies use. We are not aware of any newer versions that are in play. Doesn't mean that it might not be something at a future that might occur, that some updates might become available. But at this point in time, we're not aware of that. So in that context, the recommendation that we made was to maintain the current ones, but obviously in the future that would be certainly could be reconsidered. These are in that regard temporal recommendations based on what we know today, and not what we necessarily will find out next year. So this one was that everything was marked as maintained. So the next slide is going to be very straightforward for the two standards in play, a maintain. And with that, we are at the end of the detailed 55 list. Clearly, each one in the report has a full description of the disposition as well as a rationale. And the rationale provides that additional clarity that we provided in the highlights during this presentation when considering a phase out and replacement in particular. What was the rationale for doing that? And the main reasons that you will see is that because there is awareness of a new published version, there is already a reference in ASVAB of a more current version, and therefore it is a reasonable consideration to move forward. Whether that is the exact version to move forward with is out of the scope of the task force. These dispositions were the main focus, but we felt that without providing a rationale, it's hard to understand why did we recommend maintain or phase out. But it is up to the next cycle of rulemaking otherwise, and it sounds like from updates from Elise Anthony that we have something to look forward to pretty soon, where a number of these standards could come back and that we see that, yeah, there is some updates being made. That's then really the time where consideration of the exact version and the exact approach would be addressed. So that's where we stopped. But we do have a couple of takeaways that Steve is going to walk us through, that we had some learnings, this being the first time this was done after 5 years of the enactment, and that could be considered for future iterations as well. And that probably is going to be a good point to then solicit further input as well from the high tech committee overall. So Steve, back to you.
Defined, as we talked about throughout the presentation, is that we did not find that any of the reference standards could really be phased out entirely or retired, that there's ongoing need for regulatory guidance to facilitate information exchange across all the standard areas. It's important for ONC to consider, as it updates regulation and replaces references to standards, that there be a suitable replacement available and a good transition plan to move from one standard to the next. It's important that regular reviews and updates occur to continue to advance capabilities to these regulated areas. It seems like 3 years may be an appropriate approach from a time perspective. Looking at recommending only to maintain or phase out fully without looking at identifying a potential replacement might be insufficient in looking at developing useful information for ONC. So the task force developed a rationale to help explain or identify what potential standards might be considered in a future rulemaking effort. Again, looking at identifying where there's a viable or potentially viable alternative. And we suggest that something similar occur looking to the future, because it's really difficult to, without considering what's on the horizon, to determine whether an existing standard could be maintained or phased out. Next slide, please. One of the challenges in that space is that the Cures Act review process does create potentially duplicative processes. Looking first at the review to determine if a standard could be maintained or replaced, and then at the time of opening a rule or developing potentially replacement regulations, to again revisit and identify and specify perhaps in greater detail what specific standards might be used as replacement. And it might be more efficient to determine a way or figure out a way to do it as a more unified process. The task force also understands that the SVAP process enables voluntary adoption of standards by HIT developers outside the normal regulatory updating process. And that does create a new floor. But one of the challenges of SVAP is it may inadvertently create some interoperability challenges, especially when a standard adopted through SVAP is not backward compatible with other systems, and or if other trading partners do not make similar updates to their system. So that's something that we need to be cognizant of going forward. And as a last takeaway, a couple of reference standards and viable alternatives were not available at no cost to task force members, which limited the ability for a thorough review of the standards by all members. However, presentations by subject matter experts did enable us to understand what the focus and emphasis areas of those standards were, but that was just the limitation that we wanted to acknowledge in our presentation and our report. And I believe that is the last takeaway. Let's go to the next slide. Yes, it is. So now I'd like to open the floor for discussions and questions.
Thank you, Stephen and Hans. That was an excellent presentation. And I wanted to say that you did an exceptional job as co-chairs and your entire team on the task force in putting together the report, super report. So thank you.
Welcome, Chris.
I don't see any hands up yet.
We do recognize there's a lot of technical information in the report, in the material.
Yeah, it's definitely not a report for the meek.
There was one notation about a potential mismark on a legend in one of the earlier slides, looking at something that I think might have been blue that should have been green. And we will note that, make the appropriate change.
And I also took a note of three different pages that had some typos, but they're not substantive. They're just, you know, grammatical corrections. So I will send that via email. I don't think it affects the vote at all.
Thank you. So, I see that Steve, that Dr. Lane has his hand up. Dr. Lane.
Yes. Go ahead, Stephen.
Yes. Thank you so much. And thanks for a wonderful presentation. Really quite thorough and understandable. I put a question in the chat, which really has to do with how is ONC planning on taking these recommendations and turning them into a glide path for the industry to see these advanced standards implemented? How can we move from recommendation to anticipation and subsequent change? And then I'll also just highlight a comment from the public. Chantal Worsla ask a question about whether there was consideration given to how these such changes would be operationalized. And I think that those are related but different questions, and would love to hear a response.
So Mike, is there someone that from ONC that could respond to that question?
Hey, Denise, this is Avinash. Can you hear me?
Hi, Avinash.
Thank you. I was about to jump in with my raised hand feature on the Zoom. So thanks, Stephen. And first of all, congratulations again on your upcoming role. I think Hans did a good job. I think, you know, as the scope of this effort was to look at adopted standards in our regulations, really the process for ONC would be to kind of when the next crank of regulations occur is when we look into updating of all the adopted standards, and certainly you know that would be one step. Now obviously these adopted standards get referenced in multiple ways. For example, I think again the team here did reference the standards version advancement process, which again is a regulatory framework that has updated standards that's allowed through our processes, and that are also again a place where we will consider some of these items. And finally, I would pitch in and say that the interoperability standards advisory, which again is not regulatory requirement, but also a place where we are able to highlight updated standards and or things where we kind of look into the recommendations from HITECH and be able to provide insights to industry that does use standards but are not part of our certification program can certainly leverage. So a lot of places, all the way from regulations, which are kind of, you know, that happen at periodic rate, and as Elise mentioned, there is an NPRM that's at OMB up for proposed rulemaking in the upcoming cycle. Is one of our primary places. But thank you. Does that help, Stephen?
Yes, absolutely.
And maybe some additional comments based on also some of the chat. That you will see in the report, and if you all where you've already read it, you will see is that, and Stephen, as Heike already highlighted as well as an example, there are some areas like in public health, as a specific example, there is a more current version out there. In some cases, there are three or four more current versions out there that could be chosen. It then really depends on the stakeholders and the parties that need to make respective changes, updates, otherwise, what is the right timing for that? In fire, we mentioned that as well. There is a consideration that if you want to go from fire R4 to anything after that, whether you go to R4B or R5 once it's ready, or R6 if you want to skip all that, whatever the outcome is going to be, there is going to be a need for a strong involvement and what it means to adopt. That can range from, yes, there's the standard that's already out there, like in public health, but it takes work to get there. What is the impact? Or in the case of a fire R4 to a later version, all the implementation guides that are currently R4 based would have to go through an update as well, because not necessarily everything is done the same way in the more current version of fire. Those considerations, and that's a little bit of part of the key takeaway, it was a little bit of an interesting challenge to be asked, what can we maintain, what can we replace, but not go too far in the discussion of what should it be replaced by and when, because that was not part of the charter. So it was a little bit of a balancing act, and we hope that with the rationales that we provided, there is some clear indication the direction which one should consider. And surely with work in progress already has been considered or is being considered, but that was actually not part of the task force charter.
This is Steve. Just to add on to that piece, where the task force did look at the landscape, we were not charged with identifying a time frame for potential adoption or identifying any or all possible standards. So we did look kind of on what's currently in place or what we knew about that was coming up within the next couple of months. We're kind of our time borders in looking at creating some awareness about what's in place in the landscape today. From a time frame perspective, we didn't suggest or identify at the next relevant regulatory update without creating a specific time frame, but again, tying it back to awareness of what's available today or what would be available. We didn't set a hard date, but really looking within the next month or so about what might be available as an available standard.
So I know ONC can't comment at all what's in the proposed rule that's coming up, but just from my perspective, it seems like the work of the task force was almost out of sequence with the work on that rule. But obviously I think that ONC is well aware of some of the nuances in your recommendations and probably have already considered some of them, but I guess we'll see when the rule comes out.
Yeah, and that we had a little bit of a discussion about that as well, the sequencing of these events, given where we're at, what we're starting to think might happen in October. So it's a question of, as we did this work, are we looking a couple months ahead, weeks perhaps, or are we looking a year or two out? Because we formally don't know when some of these are going to be a part of an update. And as it goes through an every 3-year cycle, according to the Act, alignment of that and proximity would help to better understand as a lesson learned moving forward, as well as that how can they be better combined? Because the moment that you start to talk about, can I maintain or replace? You really have to go through the discussion of what would I replace it with? And if you cannot go too far in that discussion, some of that will have to be repeated in a way by the time that the actual rulemaking relative to it occurs. So it's a little bit of the way that the Act requires what we need to do and how the regulatory sequence plays out, and that hopefully we can fine tune that a little bit more.
Exactly. So that's generally what I was thinking. So do we have any other questions before we go to a vote or concerns? I don't see any hands. If there's anybody that's just on the phone. All right. Well, I think we're ready to go forward with the vote then. So if I could get a motion for approval.
Motion. Georges moves.
Okay. I'll second it.
Stephen.
Okay, and now we've got, okay, Jim proposed the motion and Aaron, Mary seconded it. So all those in favor of adopting the recommendations from the Adopted Standards Task Force, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 And anyone aye. Who is not in favor, no. Any abstentions? All right. So that order of business is complete. And thank you again, Hans and Stephen, and your entire task force. All right. So now I'm going to turn this over to Aaron and Madel to talk about the annual report work group.
Yes. Thank you very much, Denise. Appreciate that. And I want to give a lot of kudos to my illustrious co-chair here, Madel. She has done phenomenal jumping into the co-pilot seat, helping to really run through this and really bring some fantastic perspective. So I'm very excited to give this update today. And as we continue to build towards our annual report, I think it's important that we get to goals. So the way this will work today is I will kind of take us through sort of our schedule and some upcoming events. Madel will bring you through the crosswalk, and then we'll, of course, we'll facilitate any Q&A. Madel, anything you want to say up front real quick?
No, well, thank you for the kind words, Aaron, but no, you summarized this wonderfully. Looking forward to this discussion.
Perfect. All righty. Let's rock and roll. Next slide, please. All right. So we obviously got next slide. Let's go to the next slide. There we go. This is our membership. Really great, diverse group of folks. Really good, some good voices around the table. And we really work through your comments, HITAC. So as you feed in your feedback, items that you have bring to the table, it brings a lot of good discussion. We've had excellent perspectives on this, so we hope to share that with you as we further go through the crosswalk today. But again, really appreciate everybody on this list. And of course, thank you to the ONC staff and especially Michelle Murray and team. They are rock stars and couldn't do this without them. I keep saying that, but it really is true. Next slide. All right, next slide. All right, so we are here. That's September 7th meeting we already did. So the October 6th meeting is next. And of course, all through the year to transmit in the springtime. Next slide. For us right now, we are talking, obviously, the September 4th meeting, 14th meeting, excuse me, today. What's going on right now, the sort of the status and flight of the crosswalk. It's great. The crosswalk is a good representation of the past several years. For those of you who are here in the early days of the HITAC, there was no crosswalk, right? We had to develop all that. And it was a really interesting matrix and confluence of all these topics and how do we make it synthesized and digestible. And even this year's representation on this group has continued to work and refine that crosswalk to make sure that it's very understandable, digestible, and there's a lot of content. We try to present it in a way that, you know, even the most basic of understandings of health IT, you can actually read into and say, okay, I know what that's about. Next slide. All right, so we're gonna continue to develop the crosswalk of topics I was mentioning here. We're gonna provide you feedback, and of course, we're gonna present the draft report for your approval, HITAC, early 23 for transmittal to Dr. Tripathi. Next slide. All right, let's go into the crosswalk. Madel?
Great, thank you so much, Aaron. So as Aaron mentioned, one of the things that we wanna do today is present the crosswalk. And this actually includes all of the various different topics organized by all of our key target areas. And what we would appreciate from HITAC is just any additional comments on this crosswalk as we present it to you. Now, one thing that you will realize when we do go into the crosswalk is that we have three various different columns and we have opportunities, but not the recommendations yet. So please continue to think about any other recommended activities that you feel will be necessary for each one of these topics. So the primary topics that you will see that this crosswalk is organized is underneath five main areas. Number one, design and use of technologies that advance health equity. Two, use of technologies that support public health. And then interoperability, privacy and security, and patient access to information. And of course, all of these areas are defined in the Cures Act. Next slide. So just to orient everyone to how this report looks right now, we have the topic to the far left, the gap, which was really the reason why this topic is even being explored. And then all the various different opportunities that we have. And then the next time that we come and present to HITECH, we'll have some of those recommendations as well, and which we've already started, but we're fleshing out some additional items. So starting off with the target area of design and use of technologies that advance health equity. Now, this is a brand new target area. And many of you all may notice we have a new name for it as well. And we wanted to make sure this target area directly aligned with ONC's Health Equity by Design initiative and focus, where health equity by design is really being thoughtful and intentional and ensuring that we're promoting and advancing equity in every single part of our policies, our initiatives, our infrastructures, and standards. So the very first topic of health equity by design is once again thinking about all of those various different areas where we can intricately intertwine equity into the core of all we do when it comes to health IT in this country. And the various different opportunities that we have is continuing to help to move everyone along to think about how important health equity by design is. It's not something you think about after the fact, but it's something that you strategize from the very beginning. But then also thinking about how we clearly define all of the various different nuances and differences between overall health equity, health care equity, and then also health data equity and justice, which there are significant differences with just equity and justice, even when it comes to data. But in order to actually get to the point where we're thinking about health equity by design, we also have to take a look at our data collection. So that's the second topic underneath this target area. And so many, many of us, both in the healthcare systems as well as overall public health, have been really trying to figure out the best ways in order to standardize our data collection to promote greater health equity related initiatives and ensure that we're doing it in a way that's not incorporating biases. So the opportunity for really diving into our inequities when it comes to data collection is to continue to advance industry standards on how we collect not only various different items such as, which we'll get into, demographic features, but all of the other factors that play into health equity, as well as thinking about the additional data that can be utilized and increased in order to support items such as missing race or missing social determinants or social drivers of health data. So a lot of various different opportunities there to start to really structure our standards even more in terms of collecting data that promotes health equity. And the next topic, when it comes to electronic exchange of health equity and social determinants or social drivers of health, what we have was the gap of, well, how do we appropriately exchange all of this information, and especially between our provider systems, our public health systems, and even our social service systems? And how can we do that electronically where we don't have a lot of redundancy or fragmentation? So the opportunity in this topic is really for us to promote some of those best practices that are there or either really spur some additional innovation for the electronic exchange of data that is going to adequately and intentionally promote health equity as well as the various different social driver data. And hopefully moving us even more towards having those standards, not only for race, ethnicity, and language, but also for sexual orientation, gender identity, and so many of the other social demographic features that we know are so important to our individual patients, our populations, and for us to provide the best care and public health initiatives. Next slide. Now, the next portion in this target area is bias. And so we've had many different conversations about all of our brand new algorithms and our clinical decision-making tools, and even how AI has so many great potential efforts or impacts that it can make. But if we're not careful, what can occur is that various different algorithms and AI tools can actually perpetuate things such as racism, sexism, and other forms of bias directly through our systems. So an opportunity that we have here is actually to start setting up the structures to screen both healthcare and public health data systems in order to identify algorithms or clinical decision support tools that may be rooted in things such as racialized medicine, and making sure that we are eliminating those or replacing them with more appropriate algorithms in order not to perpetuate bias. And in addition to that, one of the areas that are there for opportunity is really also making sure that we're supporting our overall clinicians and healthcare and public health providers and professionals of how to conduct and gather data from patients in an unbiased way during their screenings. So part of the opportunity is also to encourage additional digital tools that actually allow us to do the appropriate patient interviews and screenings without bringing it into our systems or actually relaying this information in a biased manner. Next slide. Now, that was all of the summary of the key topics of our brand new target area, which is the design and use of technologies to advance health equity. And this topic area is the use of technologies that support public health. And so the very first topic is public health data systems. Again, health equity, public health, we were so diving into this even more due to the amplification of so many of the challenges that we've had during the pandemic. And now, of course, as we continue into the endemic. And so when looking at the public health data systems infrastructure, one area for opportunity that was identified is the need to continue to coordinate as well as to standardize some of the various different gaps that prevent appropriate and efficient sharing of data information, especially when it comes to supporting public health efforts. So an opportunity, especially for this report, is to continue to promote all of the various different recommendations to improve the bi-directional exchange of information between public health and healthcare providers and other entities that need to have this information in a very timely manner in order to support public health as well as clinical care. And that flows directly into the second topic, which comes along with public health data reporting, and especially when it comes to our electronic case reporting. And this also can include our initial electronic case reporting as well. And so once again, we went through several trials by fire during the pandemic, and now even with some of our additional emerging conditions such as monkeypox, and we're seeing even other items emerging, that oftentimes we need to make sure that we can rapidly implement appropriate electronic case reporting in order for us to have a unified public health response. So we need to make sure that we have that enhanced communication between the overall clinics and health systems, clinicians, and public health organizations. And so an opportunity that we have here for this report is once again to continue to reinforce the adoption and support of ECR by public health organizations, healthcare providers, as well as overall health IT developers and innovators, so that we do have those clear standards so that we are prepared as a country to rapidly respond to any type of public health emerging disease or threat that we may actually see. Public health data reporting still, when looking at electronic laboratory reporting, same exact type of underlying concepts and some of the same challenges that we've had with the electronic case reporting. So really, as we've expanded ELR, we also need to make sure that we have clear standardization across our reporting systems. And so we can do this even more by aligning the standards, once again, used by public health organizations, labs, as well as healthcare providers, so that we do have that appropriate transmission of laboratory data. And then syndromic surveillance, again, we tend to have it very focused in the acute care setting. I'm an emergency physician, so we report out large amount of public health data directly from our EDs. And of course, we do that from our acute care settings. But we have a gap. We don't have the same level of syndromic surveillance in many of our ambulatory settings or in our long-term facilities or others in like such as rehabilitation facilities. So we need to think about this a bit more and prepare for more large-scale data needs in order to appropriately respond to outbreaks and pandemics by expanding these surveillance systems beyond the acute care settings so that we're not missing really one of the largest chunks of our patient populations that we need to focus on to keep them safe. And then last but definitely not least, our public health informatics workforce. We can't do any of this work without wonderful people on the ground that are helping us collect data, analyze data, and help to push forward various different initiatives. But we're still experiencing challenges with maintaining a very well-equipped public health workforce, not only in terms of just numbers and their expertise as they're doing this day-to-day work, but also when it comes to the various different forms of technology. So an opportunity here is to continue to think of great various different programs as well as other types of investments to improve the IT capabilities and the capacity of our overall public health workforce. Next slide. Now, moving into interoperability, and this is an area that has really been discussed in some of the previous years, and there's still very important topics for us to continue to discuss and streamline. And the first topic is streamlining of our health information exchange data. And so as we are all in all of our various different organizations and institutions, we are all expanding electronic data exchange. But as we expand, we can also start to become more fragmented, more siloed. So one of the opportunities that we do have to keep centered is how we can leverage TEFCA in particular in order to advance interoperability with all of these new systems that are emerging in order to reduce the overall number of methods or the overall number of avenues that we have for appropriate electronic health information exchange. And so that's a really important piece for us to do. If not, we're going to put out information in various different areas and we won't have the overall succinctness that we need to be impactful. Now, closed loop referrals is another important piece of this. One item that it came to when it came to interoperability standards and priority uses was that there has been a lack of cross-organizational support for closed loop referrals, and especially when it comes in directly for social services. So oftentimes information is sent out, but it doesn't come back to complete that referral. So what can we do about that? One of the things that we can do is continue to explore the opportunities to advance these standards in order to ensure that these referral processes do close and that we do can kind of sum them up in more ways than one. But then also thinking about how we can increase the adoption of various different systems with integration with our social service agencies. Again, coming out of the pandemic and transitioning into this new time, we know that when it comes to overall health and overall public health, we have to be as united as possible with our social service agencies. And this is definitely one of those clear areas that we can dive into and enhance even more. Now, e-prior authorization also brings up various different opportunities and challenges for us because there has been a lack of common standards to support prior authorizations across payers. I can tell you, even from my own clinical practice and also my administrative work, e-prior authorization, I think all of us have been impacted in more ways than one. So if we do want to make sure that we are being as patient-centered as possible and we are making sure that we're getting our patients to the appropriate level of care in the most efficient and effective way possible, we still need to take a look at these standards on how we can improve systems across the country in order to expedite these prior authorizations. And then lastly, in the area of interoperability, one thing that the work group was also discussing, and of course, other input from HITECH as a whole, was looking at our directory standards and management. And so there are numerous healthcare stakeholders that we have, and we need to have appropriate communication between all of the various different healthcare providers. But sometimes being able to identify all of the digital codes for each one of our various different healthcare providers can be challenging. And so therefore, if we're really promoting interoperability and appropriate health information exchange, we need to improve the accessibility of those electronic endpoints and that electronic directory of all of our various different healthcare stakeholders. Next slide. And then the next continuation of interoperability is standards for patient matching. And so this is by far a priority, and especially when it comes to assessing the level of care that we're providing to our patients, but then also just making sure that we're meeting the individual needs of our patients and our populations. And so the gap that we have identified and have explored as overall HITACH is that when it comes to patient matching, we still have a significant room for improvement. And also, as we're thinking about some how to improve, we really have to center the needs of our most vulnerable and marginalized populations, because some of the very separate methods for patient matching may be highly acceptable in one population or one area of the country, but may actually be shunned upon for a different population. So we really want to be comprehensive and inclusive when we're thinking about the various different ways for us to appropriately match patient information. And so what is before us? One of the things that's before is that we really need to dive a little bit deeper into addressing the alignment of various different incentives and certification programs across the various different domains in order to create a much larger approach to improving patient matching, but also thinking about, again, those various different tools that are needed that will be adopted by various different patient populations, as well as various different provider organizations. And then continuing to develop those standards that enable the appropriate and efficient linking of de-identified data. And moving along in terms of thinking about how we are inclusive and we're making sure that we are providing the most equitable care possible through our various different health information technologies, of course, telehealth is right there in the center of that. And so one topic that was also really discussed within our work group was the use of telehealth, as well as how do we use telehealth appropriately in order not to increase the digital divide, but in order to truly provide equitable accessibility and equitable use of all of this technology. So one of the things that have been discussed, but from HITACH and especially also within the annual report work group, is improving that bi-directional exchange of information through our telehealth providers, which may or may not be affiliated with an overall healthcare clinic or system, and ensuring that that information from those telehealth providers is able to also be transmitted directly to that patient's care team and vice versa. But then also being very intentional and thoughtful about the development of our technologies and ensuring that the telehealth platforms that we are implementing are equitable in all ways when it comes to overall ability status, when it comes to language alignment, and then also when it comes to the overall technology in more ways than one. So lots of different areas for us to explore in the use of telehealth when it comes to providing recommendations. Next slide. Privacy and security. So the first topic underneath the privacy and security target area was looking at the alignment of innovation and regulation. And you'll see that there's two primary areas here. One is just general, and the other one is focused on the consent directives. So one of the recommendations from HITACH when thinking about the alignment of innovation and regulation is that we now have a large number of providers and overall health systems that are adopting various different applications and adopting various different APIs. And so we want to make sure that all of that data is secure and not adding any additional liability to both privacy as well as security. And so one opportunity that we have is to make sure that we are enforcing the importance of, yes, we're accelerating innovation, but let's make sure that all this innovation that we are seeing and growing and encouraging is also has some guardrails around it in terms of regulation, so that we're not sort of like the wild, wild west, but we're making sure that all of these various different apps and APIs are created in the most appropriate way in order to protect overall privacy and security. And the same type of alignment between innovation and regulation is very important for the consent directives. And so as we continue to see the rise of innovation, even when it comes to consent directives, really making sure that we're adopting some of those various different common standards to capture and exchange all of the various different forms of electronic consent in an appropriate way that aligns with our regulations. Appropriate exchange and use data is the next topic underneath privacy and security. And so as we've all been thinking about the HIPAA minimum standards, necessary standards, and all the various different data that we are exchanging with one another, there's definitely still some opportunities for improving some of the various different segmentations of that data, not only for ease of use so that we don't have various different sets of data that are being transmitted that have a large amount of unimportant or non-essential information, but also the opportunities are there in which we can promote greater development of adoption of implementation guidelines that actually do improve the overall segmentation capabilities. And we always want to think about reducing the burden on our healthcare providers. So how can we actually also continue to help to recommend structures in order to track the evolving privacy landscape across the country in order to decrease that burden for our healthcare providers? Cybersecurity events across healthcare infrastructure, there's been a large amount of work that's been working on this, as we know. And so one of the things that the work group offered was that it's our time to actually hear and see what's going on also in the cybersecurity space. And maybe what we can actually do is bring in some of the best practices from outside of the healthcare sector on ways that we can improve our cybersecurity preparedness within the healthcare sector. So really having a listening tour and trying to identify those best practices in alignment with all of the other wonderful groups that are working on this in order to continue to encourage and amplify all of this important work. And then the last topic underneath privacy and security was privacy of sensitive data. And this is a little bit of a change from when we previously discussed it with HITECH. Initially, it was thought about women's health, but we know that this is, should really be focused on overall sensitive health data, really focused on that data for both women and gender diverse populations. And so one of the aspects of this that we have been discussing and we have the opportunity to go deeper into is make sure that we are improving the awareness of all of our stakeholders about sensitive health data, specifically for women and gender diverse populations, and how various different aspects of our technology can support that form of privacy as well as clinical care. And then also creating and thinking about those additional opportunities to improve the technical and operational approaches to protect sensitive health data, because we want to protect it, but we also want to use it in a way that, again, we are providing the best prevention, treatment, and overall outcomes for all of our gender diverse, as well as women populations and others. Next slide. Now, the last topic is patient access to information, and three main topics underneath this target area. So the first topic was looking at safety and impact of mobile health applications. This is very similar to what we were discussing with the innovation and regulation alignment. We're starting to have a large number of mobile health applications that are coming out and definitely being marketed to the general public, but we're not really quite sure, and there may not have has been as much research and insight into the overall effectiveness of a lot of the various different mobile health apps. And so it's really important that we think about the guidance, and especially when it comes to data security in these mobile apps. So the opportunity that has been identified is to continue to support the awareness and education for providers and patients regarding not only the validity of some of these various different apps, but then also making sure that we are supporting the data security of the apps as well through some additional recommendations and standards. And cost transparency has been a very hot topic, as we know, over the past couple of years, and especially coming down from some of our other regulatory bodies. And what we have seen, though, is that overall there's been a lower than expected compliance rate among hospitals with some of the price transparency rules. And one important aspect of HITECH is always to think about and center patients' experiences and voices. And so one area that we think that we can provide in this annual report is to try to gather information to understand patients' experiences with trying to access all of the various different cost transparency data, and also providing, getting their feedback on what we can do to try to overcome such barriers as well. And then the last topic is consolidation of health information. Once again, with all of these new systems, all of these new mobile health apps, our patients actually can have their information stored in various different platforms. And that does sometimes present a challenge because we want to make sure that all of our patients have the ability to not only access all of their protected health information, but also consolidate it and share it across multiple platforms, multiple portals, and also be able to consolidate it into one view for themselves to review or to review directly with their providers. So one thing that we think is also very important is to recommend and continue to push a streamlined form of access and consolidated viewing of all of the various different health information that a patient may have stored in different portals and different platforms, but then also continue to support the development of apps that address the needs of our most under-resourced and marginalized communities as well, because this is an important aspect also of the exchange of health information. Various different apps may work for some and may not work for others. And so as we're thinking about the unique experiences and the unique abilities of various different diverse patient population, all the way from those that may be vision impaired to those that may not have the economic means in order to have certain type of mobile devices, we really do want to think about and continue to encourage the industry to develop more inclusive applications so that there is no inequities in terms of having access to patients' own information. Next slide. So that was a little bit of a whirlwind, going through some of the various different topics in each one of our five target areas. And so I will actually ask my co-chair, Aaron, to join me, and we'll see if there's any questions directly from HITACH.
Absolutely. So real quick off the bat, while folks raise their hand and whatnot, I did want to address, I had a few HITACH members reach out to me that are new to the committee saying, hey, how can we incorporate our feedback? A couple ways. Number one, obviously, you should have all received the most recent document here in the summary that was sent out to all HITACH members of all of our documents for topics. Please review it. If you didn't, reach out to me, reach out to the ONC team. We'll make sure we get you a draft of the crosswalk. You can get your comments back to me and Medell if you want to email us, or Michelle Murray, of course. Your comments, your feedback, all of those feedback items are incorporated into our discussions. And of course, then if we need further clarity or follow up, we invite the respective member to come to an annual report work group meeting and just talk about it so we can understand and seek first to understand. So I just wanted to throw that out there for the new members that your feedback is absolutely heard and we want you to take the time and to listen. All right, so first up, we've got Ike with his hand raised.
Thank you so much for this, and thank you so much for all your work on developing the framework. I do think, and I noticed looking at the discussion of public health resources and public health components, that there's certainly other work going on in other places about data standards and electronic case reporting. And like, I want to make sure that we're aligning efforts in that space and really targeting the right issues, not necessarily looking at adding additional standards, but looking at complying with existing standards and making sure that we're getting high quality data across the system. So it may not necessarily be that we need a new standard. It may be that we need some different changes. I think also looking at not just staffing, but looking at ongoing support for infrastructure is a necessary thing, because it's one thing to build a system, it's another thing to maintain, as we all well know. So there's got to be a good forward path so that we can not only operationalize once, but maintain that infrastructure.
Good points.
All really, really good points. And we do want to emphasize for all of these various different topics and opportunities and recommendations, this is all directly in coordination with all of the other work groups, as well as all of the other work that is being done even outside of HITACH with the various different efforts. So absolutely, it's not about adding more, but coordinating and making sure that we're filling in any gaps. So thank you so much for that.
Great comments, Ike. Dr. Lane, you're up, sir.
Thank you. I just really wanted to thank the co-chairs and the members of this work group. I've been participating in the group and have been thoroughly impressed with how useful and deep the conversations have been. I also want to encourage other HITECH members to appreciate the critical importance of this work group. It's really an opportunity for HITECH members to provide direct and specific input to the ONC, even though it kind of may seem sort of boring to work on an annual report. We really don't have a lot of other opportunities to work at this level of detail to provide that input. And I think others who want to participate may choose to step forward and jump into the fray. I think in particular, Dr. Briggs Melanson, who is a new HITECH member and stepped into this role as a work group co-chair, which is not a small task. You've just done a tremendous job really helping to both lead and organize the discussion. And I just wanted to thank you publicly for that.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And it's all been a group effort. This work group is amazing. And I must say, it's not boring work. So any new HITECH members, it's really not boring. I've been learning so much, even for all my co-work group members. So appreciate you all.
All right. Any other comments from the HITECH? Again, take your time. Look at the documents that were sent out. Marinate on it. Think about it. We have some time still, but your comments do matter. And if anything pops in your head at a random hour or whatever, send us an email. We're happy to look at that and take care of it. Or just shoot me or Medell a note directly, or Michelle a note. And if you feel comfortable that way, we got you. We want to make sure your voice is heard and your comments are heard, particularly in some of the new areas around health equity and others. Those are very, very critically important. And the work group feels very passionately about that topic, that we have to incorporate that appropriately and dynamically. So your feedback matters. Okay, I don't see any other hands raised. So with that, I think I'm going to, just gonna go one second here. Yeah, we're gonna, just gonna go to the next task force then. All right, so that, Medell, thank you very much. Great job, appreciate you as always. Again, just, she's just rock star stuff. So I'm so grateful that you're on this committee with me. All right, next up we've got Jillian and Arian, you're up.
Good morning. How are you all doing? So we recently convened the Public Health Data Systems Task Force in usual HITECH fashion. This task force was announced last meeting, and we've already had three meetings. We got off the ground and running extraordinarily quickly. So if we can go to the next slide. So we're gonna briefly review charge, which Mickey covered in the last meeting. Give you the usual one-page membership, and then Jillian will cover timeline, approach, and how we're going about carving up the work. So if we go on to the next slide. Our charge, as Mickey noted in the last meeting, is to really follow on, first of all, the great work of the standards update task force, and then the continued work, particularly the last public health data systems task force, to look at certification criteria and the associated standards implementation criteria. And so in particular, this charge is divided into three groups. One is looking at gaps in functionality and standards and existing F criteria for the EHR side of this. So, I think as Mickey mentioned in the last meeting, if we think about this as pitchers and catchers, subcharge one is all about making sure that we have the right standards updates for the, in most cases, the pitchers, the data transmitters for public health. Although in the case of immunization, there's a query retrieve portion to this. The second is looking at public health data systems themselves, as was previously mentioned. We have historically not had certification criteria for public health data systems. And so we're looking at the F criteria and associated standards and implementation guidance associated with public health to look at opportunities to further standardize and potentially certify public health data systems. And then subpart three is looking at the end-to-end data flows. And so in most cases, we have simple pitchers and catchers with respect to the public health data. And then in other cases, we have some intermediaries, some other systems along the way. The most complicated of these workflows probably is ELR, where we have a provider ordering a test, a lab, doing the test and an analysis, and then secondary data flows to public health. And so it's really important for us to contemplate the end-to-end data flows that are associated with certification criteria. So that is our charge. I will turn it over to Jillian.
Next slide, please.
Oh, sorry. I have this boring slide. It's not a boring slide. It's our it's our fantastic task force and roster. But everybody can read the illustrious folks that we have here. We're lucky enough to have great participation from a variety from the full ecosystem. Really thinking through the provider side, EHR vendor side, as well as the public health stilt side. And national federal providers, including CDC and CMS. So we are well covered in terms of expertise on this task force. Sorry, now over to you, Jillian.
Thank you. So as Arian mentioned, we have a very tight timeline and we've been off and running and have had several meetings. We hope to wrap up our recommendations by mid-November and we'll be coming back to this group to present along the way. So next slide, please. So our approach has been and is to review the various different F criteria, which I believe are going to be mentioned on each of the slide, and really discuss what are the key components, the key questions that are arising, the key challenges areas for each of those criteria, and are having subject matter experts from both the representing both the provider, public health at both the state and the federal level and subject matter experts from various different vendor organizations presenting to kickstart each of the discussions that we're having on the call. So next slide, please. These here are the list of the F criteria, which we are reviewing. We began with immunization registries, but we have and have worked through electronic case reporting, and we'll be moving on to electronic laboratory reporting, cancer registries, antimicrobials, and healthcare services surveys, as well as syndromic surveillance. I think it's really important to note that each of these criteria are at various stages in implementation and have different standards and requirements in play, different problems, and different data uses for public health. And so as we are walking through each of these criteria, we're documenting those differences and discussing what may be meaningful for measured improvement. Next slide, please. I think that, it's important for us as we ask each of the subject matter experts to really look at what are those gaps, what recommendations can we do to advance and tightening up criteria. And to acknowledge that there's the importance of standards and the need to reduce variability, but there's also recognition of the critical need for data quality to result in public health action. These are a set of the questions that we're having each of the presenters address when they come on the calls. And I think that they have provided extremely good grounding in terms of all of the issues that are at play. Next slide, please. So in terms of where we are to date, as I mentioned, we began with immunizations, and we did so because they have done a lot in recent years to encourage voluntary engagement with their measurement and improvement initiative to improve alignment and functional standards and data quality. So we had Mary Beth Carrillo from ERA, Hans Bunjik representing the provider experience, and then Aaron Beeringer from Minnesota representing state. And I think that they have done an enormous amount that we can learn from to tighten up those standards and improve data quality. The challenge before us is really finding that balance and recognizing that we exist in a federated public health system and that there are often laws and regulations that require variability within the standards, but we also really need to develop consensus within the public health community and tighten those existing standards in order to reduce that variation. We have had a one of our meetings was then focused on the electronic case reporting criteria. And I think that that also was a good measure to bring up initially because the public health community really came together to determine the data requirements for the initial case report and used a centralized approach via the AIMS platform to develop a superset of trigger codes that have been managed by the Association of Public Health Laboratories. And so we had Laura Kahn from CDC, Steve Lane from representing the provider community, and then Ann Kaiser from Minnesota representing the state perspective. And we've had very lively discussion about how to move forward with recommendations and what would make sense. To document all of this, we have initiated the use of a topics tracker worksheet that really enables members to provide discrete technical recommendations within each of the criteria to develop further, to recommend further developing standards that ONC has already published, as well as to create a written forum to discuss and create frameworks for public health information certification. So we are moving rapidly, and next up will be electronic laboratory reporting, and we will come back to update you as this moves forward. Thank you. And I believe that is our last slide.
Erin, over to you.
All right. I didn't know if it was a further continuation or not. Okay. All right. So with that, then, any questions or comments from anybody in the high tech? It was a great update. Lots of stuff going on, as they both stated, and at warp speed as to what Arian was alluding to, which was par for course, I think, as we turn these things around. Any questions from the high tech? Okay, Dr. Lane.
Just another comment of thanks to the work group members and co-chairs. Here again, we have a relatively new co-chair joining to help to lead this committee, doing a fabulous job. To those of you who haven't had the pleasure of co-chairing work groups or task forces, I highly encourage you to do it. It's a tremendous opportunity to impact the direction of discussion. And here again, I think we're really seeing great work going forward and very excited to be a part of this.
Thank you very much for that. I have to say, I'm the newbie here, and Arian has been very helpful in providing a framework for how these meetings are being run. So I'm very grateful for that and to everybody's participation and engagement. It's very lively.
So this is Clem, but I can't find my hand. Can I speak?
Yes, you may. Go ahead.
Okay. So one of the things we talk about quality, and that might contain what I'm worried about. But what we see is we got a standard and then it's not very well adhered to. For example, there are some studies we and others have done that suggest that the mappings are wrong from laboratory, maybe 5%, maybe 20% of the mappings from local codes alike are wrong. No one's looking at that. I mean, so if the standards are there, but there's sort of a non-attention in some cases to them, then that might be part of data quality. But I think we ought to specifically focus on really doing the standard, not just saying it's there.
I think a lot of the data quality issues are being addressed by individual jurisdictions. And so there is potentially an opportunity to come together to have a more centralized approach for that. But I am aware of, I worked in Massachusetts for over 20 years and oversaw the electronic laboratory reporting efforts there. And, you know, there was an enormous amount of work around initial onboarding and data quality and ensuring those mappings were correct. And then, of course, the ongoing work to ensure data quality as information changed.
Yeah, and Clem, your feedback is very consistent with feedback that we received in the task force updates, for example, for ECR, the most significant issues with ECR adoption were not actually the standard and implementation guidance itself. It was the applicability of trigger conditions to the data that was being received, and in particular to non-standard lab data that's being received, or to EHRs that, although they're certified, do not have the ability, for example, to do discrimination based on SNOMED codes because they only have proprietary terminology internal to the systems. They receive the trigger codes but can't actually fire them. And so you know, that's why I was took some pains to underline our subpart three of our charter, which really looks at data intermediaries. But Clem, you know, totally endorse that interoperability in practice and certification in practice has been a theme that's come out of the testimony to date, and the need to make sure that not only do we get certified to the standards implementation guidance, but that data transmission and data use in practice is consistent with the standards implementation guidance. That, as you note, has been one of the major limitations that we've heard nationwide. Thank you.
Well, could I just add one more thing? So we've been doing some work in this space, and you can actually automate correction of a lot of the errors because there are certain patterns. People mix up substance and mass concentrations, but the units shout out which what it really is. And we've developed a tool, but we haven't published it yet, that can help to correct up to 95% of the errors that you'd see in mappings, at least for quantitative results.
Thank you.
Clem, as always, you and your group are doing blazing the new trails. Love it, as you've been always doing.
Thank you.
Other comments, other questions from the ITAC? This is good work. All right. Don't see any. All right. Well, great job, the two of you. Thank you very much for the update. Well done on the leadership of this task force and getting this across the line, closer at least across the line. So, sure.
Work to
well
be done. Thank
and,
you.
Really, really thank you for that. Denise, over to you. Any comments?
Thank you, Arian and Gillian. No, I have no other comments. I think we're at the point where we can transition to Mike for public comment.
I agree.
All right. Thank you, Denise and Arian. We're going to now open up our meeting for public comment. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand. And when it's called upon, press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause for a moment to see if anyone raises their hand. In the meantime, I just want to remind everyone that the next HITAC meeting will be held on October 13th. And if you're ever looking for HITAC meeting materials, whether for this meeting or our task forces, they can be found on the HITAC pages on healthit.gov. And still not seeing any hands raised, but if anyone wants to raise their hand, please feel free to do so. Otherwise, I will turn it back to Arian and Denise to close us out.
Absolutely. Denise, you want to start?
Sure. Well, thank you to all the presenters today. There's definitely a lot of great work going on, and I appreciate all the co-chairs' leadership and all of the task force members. And I wish you all a good rest of your month till we see you all in October. And thank you very much.
Absolutely. And I want to echo those thanks. And first off the bat, Denise, I hope you get to feeling better. Thank you for being a trooper and being here in the co-pilot seat, helping to run this, as you always are, just a champion. So appreciate that. And thank all of you for your efforts today. I do want to remind you about the October date for the full EHI definition. It is right around the corner. Please, please, please do not forget about that. That is all the data, all comprehensive as part of the information blocking under 21st Century Cures. And October date is critical from a mandate perspective. So if you're not thinking about it, please be thinking about it. And there's a number of sites out there, including on the ONC website, that really gives some good specificity and detail if you're still wondering how do you go about identifying your designated record set and all the data elements as part of the full EHI definition. So please, please, please don't forget October. Other than that, have a great rest of the month. We'll see you on various committee meetings, and we'll see you next month at the next HITAC. Have a great
one. Thank you, Aaron, for your help.
Absolutely. Bye, y'all. Have a good one.
Bye.